morning. This is Judy Mario, and this is Choices. Thank you for joining us today. We have a wonderful show for you and a fabulous guest. We're talking about the best is yet to come. And the show today is being brought to you by Choices Magazine. This magazine is one of the most positive influences that you could have in your life. It's filled with articles on such personal development subjects as healing and love, inspiration, abundance, goals, relationships, finances, health, and career information. It's just got everything to help you have a really well-balanced life, and it's very positive. It comes out 4 times a year, and it is yours free if you would like to own a subscription to Choices Online Magazine. You just go over to choicesonlinemedia.com and put a /, and current issue. That's choicesonlinemedia.com/current issue, and sign up to receive it. You'll be so glad that you did. And you're going to be so glad that you listened in this morning, too, because I have a wonderful guest. Her name is Tara Alemany. And Tara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Judy.
Yes, and listeners, this woman is just phenomenal. She's an author, and she writes about life experiences, and she tells us about how the best is yet to come, and she keeps us motivated. And she's just got so much. She's an entrepreneur. She's the founder and owner of Emerald Lake Books. I mean, she does marketing. She has so much. And on top of it, she's a mom of 2 teenagers, a stepmom to 2 dogs, and she is actually owned by a black cat like me. We have cats in common. So we're so glad to have you here today. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Because I don't think I can even do justice to all that you do.
Well, I'm an author and speaker, as you mentioned, and I speak on a number of different topics, but I spend the majority of my time talking to authors and publishers about how to create book marketing plans and how to create more visibility and grow their platforms. Both of my companies are geared towards authors and speakers, so AlloWeb Social Marketing helps authors and speakers get found online, on the stage, and on the shelf, whereas Emerald Lake Books helps you take your manuscript and create a masterpiece out of it. So between the publishing and the marketing, it's a nice handoff between the two. And I love working with authors and speakers because they have so much great content to share. They have so many inspiring stories to share. And so I get a thrill just out of, you know, being able to go through the books first before anybody else does.
I know. Isn't it fun? I love being a speaker and an author because I get to meet so many interesting people. And I love this radio show because I get people like you. And, you know, you and I have a shared connection in a speakers group on Facebook. Now, how did you get into speaking?
I originally got into speaking kind of it was a fluke. What ended up happening is I had started my first company, AlloWeb Social Marketing, soon after losing my last corporate job. And I was on my way to a networking meeting, and I'm a person of faith. And I was nervous about having started this business and not knowing what to expect at the networking meeting. And so I was in prayer on the way to the meeting. And it was one of these speed networking events, so kind of like speed dating model. All right.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what I was walking into. And so I was like, Lord, you know, just whatever opportunity you put before me, you know, I'm pursuing this business because it's your plan for me. And so I'm stepping out in faith. So whatever you have in store for me tonight, I'll say yes to. So we're doing the speed networking, and I get around to about the third mix of partners. And I sat down opposite this gentleman who had just started a business development center in the area. And after I gave my spiel and he gave his spiel, he said, you know, he said, the first seminar series that I'm having in this development center is about social media, which was my prime topic at the time.
Oh,
and he
yeah.
said, and I'm having 3 speakers come talk and then a panel the fourth session. And I need one more speaker. Would you be willing to speak? Now, I'm an introvert. So I sat there and I'm looking at him and I'm going, God, I said I'd say yes to anything. So I said yes and decided I would panic later. And that was how I got my start in speaking. But the funny thing is as much as a disaster as that first event was, because the business development center didn't have all the hookup supplies I needed. So I had to run to Walmart to get a connection to connect my computer to the laptop while everyone was waiting for me. It just crazy things like that. But it was as big a fiasco as it could be. I found I really liked it. And so the entire
didn't scare you away.
No, it didn't scare me away at all. As a matter of fact, I ended up speaking 15 times that first year, all of which was for marketing my business. Since then, through the different books that I've written and things like that, I've expanded my topics. So, you know, one of my books I co-authored, and it's about character-based leadership. So there is a student organization called DECA that I've gone and spoken
I've
to the Fall Leadership Conference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I speak on all sorts of topics now. And the last, of course, is The Best Is Yet to Come, which is I have a couple of talks related to that. It was the last of my books. And so one of them is called Finding the Gift in Grief, because the book itself is about the lessons I learned in overcoming the death of my fiancé in 2011. And it's written in such a way to be able to help anyone who's dealing with a loss process that loss. And not, I'm not talking about getting over it, because you never really do get over it, but in processing it, you can learn how to move beyond it.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, tell us one of those lessons, one of the things that you learned in overcoming your grief.
I think one of the things that I learned is that there comes a point where it becomes, you need that time and you need that grace period of actually feeling your grief. And too often we sit and assume that everyone wants us to be okay, that we need to say we feel fine. And the problem is we end up stuffing our grief, because in our society, we were never taught how to deal with it properly. When you're a kid, if your dog got hit by a car, mom and dad went out and got you a new puppy. If you got bullied at school, grandma gave you a cookie when you came home. So we always have these substitutions as opposed to really dealing with what we're feeling. So the first thing really is just give yourself space to feel what you're feeling.
Yes, and sometimes, you know, I think people tell us just to suck it up and, you know, just get on with life and just take the steps and put one step after the other, one foot in front of the other. And I really like what you're saying. Take the time to process. Take the time to process your feelings.
I had had the benefit of speaking to a friend of mine probably a year before I lost my fiance, because I was trying to help somebody else who was dealing with grief. And she gave me one piece of information that I would not have known otherwise. And that was that when someone is grieving, oftentimes that first year, for everybody else, it seems like the first year would be the hardest. For the person who's grieving, especially if they're grieving the loss of a loved one, it's often the second year that's the hardest. And the second year is hardest because a lot of the numbness that you felt initially and the shock has worn off. And now you're trying to create a new normal. And that new normal is really hard to figure out. And so oftentimes, if you're trying to support someone who has lost a loved one in particular, you can be much more helpful to them by making sure that second year that they have the opportunity to talk, that they can still feel okay about processing it with you, because they need that opportunity.
And I think so many times we don't acknowledge needs help. We think that, you know, oh, they're through their first year, it should be better now. And that's whether they've lost somebody that they love, that person died, or even if they've had a disease themselves, like if they've had cancer or something and they've gotten through it. I think so many times people think, okay, well, they've gotten through it, now they're okay. But that's when they really need to have somebody there to just kind of support them through that next period. You are so right.
Mm-hmm. We tend to get wrapped up in the busyness of our lives and forget to pay attention to what's going on in the lives of those around us. And I think just being more aware of the hurdles that we're each overcoming and really being there to support one another is important.
And don't you find sometimes that the people who look like they're the most together, that they're going on through life and they look good and they look like they've got it all together, that inside sometimes those people are hurting the most?
Yes. Yep. I completely agree with that. I had that happen actually yesterday at lunch with a friend of mine. We get together once a year for lunch, and here I was thinking the past year had all been great and good, and what he was revealing to me of what the last year had been like for him was heartbreaking. And yet when he walked in my door to have lunch, he looked perfectly happy and normal and healthy.
Yes, so, I know. I find that so many times with people is they just look like they're so together, and then we get to talking and they tell me this intimate detail of their life, and I'm just like, oh no, why did I assume something differently? I shouldn't have assumed. One day I was doing a seminar and I had a man that didn't have a partner for one of the exercises, and so I said, well, I'll be your partner. And while I was his partner, he said to me, I was planning to go home tonight and kill myself, but now that I've been here, I think maybe I just need to get some help. And I was so shocked by this. It was just hard to think that here's a person who looks together that says, I was going to go home and kill myself. And so what I love is the fact that you've written books for people like this, people who are going through some kind of trauma, that their life has been turned upside down. And I'm really particularly interested in the book called The Best Is Yet to Come, because it's such an interesting title, and I'm not sure that people believe that. So can you tell us a bit about this book?
Well, this is the book that shares the story of Frank and I, my fiancé and I, and how we met one another, and how after 12 years of being a single parent raising my kids alone, Frank's appearance in my life out of nowhere just completely upended everything. And in a very short time, we got engaged, and we were planning a life together, and 4 months later, he died. So in a span of a six-month period, I went from my life being one way to my life being completely different. On the one-year anniversary of having Frank come into my life, I decided that I wanted to start writing down everything that had happened because I wanted to make sure I didn't forget anything as time went on. So when I first started writing The Best Is Yet to Come, I was writing it for myself. I didn't realize that it was something that ultimately was going to be written for others.
Yes.
In writing, as I was writing, I started to see these pearls of wisdom that I had started to discover through the process of mourning the loss of what I had hoped for and mourning the loss of this person in my life. And I realized that there were things that applied regardless of whether that loss was a job or a marriage or a home or a person. Things like, you know, the anger and betrayal you can feel. Things like how important being willing to be vulnerable is in building relationships. Things like a single event, a single incident can be interpreted different ways by all of the different people looking at it. In my instance, because I was a parent with two kids and because I had never dated anybody since before my kids were born, they were not used to there being this other person in my life. And so when Frank died, their world was not just turned upside down because of all of the upheaval that, you know, we'd been through, but their world was turned upside down because they were very concerned about losing their one and only parent, me, because I was grieving so deeply.
Yes.
And so being willing to step back and look at things from the perspective of others and see that not everyone has the same viewpoint of the situation that you do, and that sometimes even your viewpoint will change over time. I found that when you look at circumstances that have happened a long time ago, so for instance, maybe that divorce was a divorce that you didn't really, really want to go through. And yet with the passage of time, suddenly you've experienced perhaps a freedom to discover yourself that you hadn't had when you were in that marriage, or perhaps somebody else comes along and that is the love of your life that you never would have been free to really experience the depth of emotion that comes with that.
Exactly.
So there's so many different things that come with processing grief, and when you're willing to be open to what's being revealed to you through that process, it's incredible. It's life-altering, and that is why I believe that the best is yet to come, because when we take these lessons and apply them, it allows us to look forward with hope. Now, personally, the title comes from a story that Frank had shared with me. That's one of these email pass-alongs that people send. You know, they forward all these things all the time.
Yeah.
Well, in this was a woman who was terminally ill, and she was meeting with her pastor and talking about plans for her memorial service. or funeral service, actually. And she told the pastor what hymns she wanted, what verses, all these different things. And as he was getting ready to leave, she said, oh, one more thing. And he said, what's that? And she said, when I'm in my casket and people are filing by, I want to make sure that there is a fork in my right hand. And the pastor kind of hesitated and looked at her and said, a fork? Why do you want a fork in your hand? She said, because when I was a kid growing up, I'd sit around the family dinner table at the holiday celebrations, and they'd come around to clean off the dinner dishes. I knew if they told me to keep my fork, that there was this ooey-gooey chocolate creation or a hot apple pie or something coming. And I always knew that the best was yet to come.
I love it.
I loved it, too. And for me, because Frank and I both shared the same faith, I believe that when this life is over, we still have that opportunity to be together again. So this is just a passage of time. The best truly is yet to come in that sense, but also just within this life, the things that I can do because of what I've learned and the lives that I can touch in terms of helping other people overcome their loss and overcome their grief is mm-hmm. going to enable me mm-hmm. to help them believe the best is yet to come as well.
It certainly will. It certainly will. Now, is that where, that is where the title of the book came from then, is that right?
That's where the title of the book came from, and that's where the cover design came from. A lot of people will look at the cover, which is a table set with a slice uh-huh. of birthday cake. And, you know, they look at it and they go, what does this have to do with anything? And it's because of the
I love
story.
It. It came from the story with the fork. I love that. That's wonderful. Wow. You meet with so many interesting people all the time. Do you get any of the same questions over and over? Do people ask you similar things, or do you get a lot of different questions?
The one question I get asked every single time is in The Best Is Yet to Come, when I'm sharing the story of the funeral, and what happens afterwards. Frank had two dogs that were his kids. He absolutely loved these dogs. One of them is handicapped, and Frank had invested over $10,000 in surgeries to try and help this dog, you know, just all these different things. And so one thing that people ask me all the time is, do I still have the dogs? Because when I came home for the funeral, I talk about having, you know, trying to get the dogs home from Florida to Connecticut, where I live. Yes. And how difficult that was. And so I'm always asked if I still have them. And the answer to that is, yes, I do. I have found over time that they were very well-loved dogs, but not very well-trained dogs. So we still have some training issues that I have to deal with. But, they're definitely a pleasure and a nice reminder.
And how long has this been since you've experienced this loss?
Frank's death was in October of 2011, so it's been 3 years now.
So it's still pretty fresh, and
it
already
is fresh.
You're coping with it so well. That's incredible. That's really incredible.
I think for me, a large portion of that was about writing it down, because when I wrote it, I was writing it just for
uh-huh.
me. And
yes.
I know a lot of people will talk about the fact that they can process things better when they write.
Right, I do. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Now, where do you find your inspiration now? Where do you find that strength to just keep going?
I have the strength to keep going because of the things that I hope for in the future. I've taken the time to kind of dream and think about, and it's funny because I had done this long before I ever met Frank, is there's a song by Nicole Nordman called Legacy. And in
yes.
it, it talks about how you want to be remembered when you're gone. And mm-hmm. did you make a mark? Did you do anything worthwhile? And for me, I've often thought over the last, especially since I had kids, you know, 10 years or so, it's like, you know, at my funeral, what do I want people to be saying about me?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I want to have impacted lives? And how do I want to
right.
be remembered? And so for me, a lot of it is about what I want to accomplish with my life that keeps
yes.
me motivated and going, and about the kinds of relationships that I want to build with people I care about.
That's, I think, one of the really nice things about growing older. It seems that we learn our lessons and we start to choose the people that we want to associate with to help make our life better. And I believe that's one of the things that, other people might want to look at because, in fact, just this morning I was spending time with a lady and we were walking and, well, a couple of ladies, and one of the ladies started feeling bad, like she was having a stroke or something. And I tried to help her, and this other person tried to help her, and the one lady grabbed the phone and called 911, and the lady got in a fight with the 911 operator. Now, I mean, how do you get in a fight with a 911 operator? And then she went into this drama, and she hung up on the 911, and I was watching all of this, and I was still trying to help this other lady and, you know, get it all together and call 911 back and make sure somebody was coming. And after I got home, I got to thinking about it, and I thought, do I want to spend time around this person that created such havoc that the other person's life was in danger? And I thought, this is not good. I need to be more careful about who I spend time with. I never in my life imagined somebody could get in a fight with a 911 operator and hang up on her. I was just in shock.
That is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. She was screaming at this operator, will you listen to me? Will you shut up? And I'm like, whoa, I've never seen anything like this before. You know, this woman's trying to help her. And it was just, I was like, I think I'll make another call. This is not working. But it's kind of interesting how people process things. I think there must be something that we can learn during life to make our life. What did you learn to make life better? What have you learned about associating with people? I've learned that
there's kind of two different kinds of mindsets in the world, and that one of them resonates much more with me than the other. And that is, people go through life either feeling like a victim or feeling like a victor. And I prefer associating with people who are victors rather than victims.
Yes.
And a victor is somebody who really claims responsibility for their life as it is, regardless of whether circumstances were beyond their control, because they recognize that they are in control of how they perceive it. And they can choose what they do with it. And a victim is always, you know, complaining and everybody else is at fault and, oh, woe is me, and life is never going to get any better. And it doesn't serve me to spend time with people who insist on staying stuck in that mindset, because all it does is drag me down. So I love associating with people who, despite the obstacles they've been through, despite what they've overcome, still have a positive outlook, still are embracing life, and still look forward to what tomorrow holds.
Yes. What good advice for all of us. Do you have any other recommendations for my listeners? How to make their lives better, how to know for sure that the best is yet to come for them?
You know, I think it's really a matter of understanding that it's a choice, and how we view each day is really comes down to a choice. When your feet hit the floor in the morning, you know, do you want to face the day with excitement for what's possible? Or do you want to face the day with, I'm tired and I have this long list of things to do and you know, it's just going to be more of the same tomorrow? When you make the choice to view it with that positive attitude and to view it with the recognition that you can have in your life what you want because of the choices you make. You can't necessarily say, all right, so I want to have $1 million, and because I'm going to choose to have $1 million, I'm going to have it tomorrow. No, but you can say, I want to have $1 million, and this next step will put me a little bit closer to that, and so I'm going to take that step, and this next step after that. And I think the funny thing is there's actually a Yahoo group called Fly Lady, and I don't remember the woman's name who started it, but it stands for Finally Loving Yourself. And she teaches you how to declutter your home in 15-minute increments. And the thing I always loved about the Fly Lady is she would say, you can do anything for 15 minutes. You know, and the accumulation of 15 minutes yesterday and today and tomorrow and the day after, that's an hour of cleaning that's just been done, but it was done in 15-minute increments. I did the same thing when I was teaching my kids how to clean, you know, clean their rooms when they were little. You know, and I think the same thing applies to everyday life. We have these big goals we want to achieve, but then we think, well, the goal's too big. Well, the goal doesn't have to be too big if you focus on what's one thing you can do right now that will get you closer to it. And if you commit to continually doing that one thing that's going to get you a little bit closer to it, eventually you'll be surprised how far you've come.
It's amazing, isn't it? My mother used to always say, inch by inch, life is a cinch. Yard by yard, life can be hard. She used to always say that to me. And I forget about, I need this fly lady. I need to learn how to declutter my home in 15 minutes. That would be great. It is so nice having you for a guest. You're really so interesting. I want to have you back and talk about all the other things you do because you're really a fascinating woman. I love having you here. Well, let's tell my audience how they can find out more about you and how they can get your books.
Sure. They can find me on my website, which is Tara, T-A-R-A, my middle initial R, and then Alemany, Alemany.com. They can also find me on Amazon. And so they can find my books, my author page, whatever they're looking for there.
Okay, good. All right.
And I would love to be on the show again, Judy. I've really enjoyed it as well.
That's the greatest thing about having a radio show is I get to meet so many fun and exciting people and get to talk to you. And I love your attitude. You've got such a good outlook on life. And you know, we've all been through some kinds of tragedies in our lives. And I'm sure that most of my listeners have had some type of grief or tragedy. And somebody say, here's how you can get through it. This is how you can do something. And I loved your idea about supporting the person the second year. I think people forget about that. They forget that that person needs that help that second year as well. I think that was the biggest point I got from you today. You're a fabulous guest. Thank you for being here. I so appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for being with us today. I know you've enjoyed this as much as I have. She's just been a wonderful guest, hasn't she? And don't forget to go over to choicesonlinemedia.com and sign up for receiving our magazine. I know that you're going to love it when you get it. We have wonderful articles about some top Las Vegas entertainers, about artists, about speakers, about authors. And we also have writers and authors and speakers that are a part of our staff that write for us. And we have great contributors. So go over there to choicesonlinemedia.com and take a look at that magazine. I know you're going to love it. It's me at Judy, J-U-D-I, at judymoreo.com. That's J-U-D-I-M-O-R-E-O.com. Judy at judymoreo.com. Just send me an email and tell me what subjects you would like to talk about, what subjects you would like to hear about, and if there's any particular guest you would like me to invite to be on the show. This show is about you. It's about your life. It's about helping you make your life better. So thank you for joining us today, and I hope to see you soon. And the biggest thing I want you to always, always, always remember is that you are more than enough.